outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Happy New Year. Yeah, I know, it's just a date on a calendar. For some of us, it's not that big a deal, but it also does provide the options for a new beginning and a bit of a marker. I'm kind of excited to see where 2022 may go, and not only God's continuing work in the world, but passing off some of his work to another generation and how we can be part of that. I'm really excited to see how that unfolds. One of the opportunities that has most shaped my life this past year is praying biweekly with a group of brothers and sisters from all over the world who are asking God how we might agree with him to further what he wants to do. Both last week's rerun and this one come out of that dialogue. Listening to God together and finding agreement with him has profoundly changed so much of my life and given me direction in the most challenging circumstances I face today. Gone are the days of desperately pleading God to do the work I want, and I have found myself growing even more secure in his love, more at rest in his work, and more able to recognize God's play that draws me into more of his truth. It's a dance inside the Trinity that allows my relationship to grow. At the same time, it equips me to live more freely in the world and more equipped to be at peace, even in the painful circumstances that come my way. I wish I was doing that completely in my life. But I'm grateful that at this age, I'm still learning, and I treasure those moments when Father and I seem most connected. There's no better way to live that than to be at love, at rest, and at play. Kyle and I talked about it on our April 16 podcast. I've been living in the aftermath of the revelations last week from Lewis and Raphael and stuff that happened to me in the mountains. I told a group today I was meeting with online, it just feels like that line between eternal life and temporal life is very thin these days for me. Mm-hmm. And there's things when I'm not even thinking about necessarily quote-unquote spiritual things. There's just insight dropping into my heart in interesting ways. And I don't know where any of it's going at the moment. I'm just along for the ride, and it feels like that. And it's I'm just having fun. So there's play on both sides of it. There's play in my spiritual life with God right now and learning to live in that love and rest and enjoying it. And then there's play that, I don't play golf without God. So if I'm playing golf at Riviera, God's alongside. And it's just one of those really precious seasons in my heart and life in so many ways, and things that I'm seeing and things that I will come out in one way or another up the road somewhere. But I like that whole version, that whole terminology of thin space, because it feels really thin right now. It feels like I don't have to lean very far one way or another to have a sense of what God's about or things he's putting in my heart. And I don't know really what those things are for yet. And the old Wayne is going to be asking, what's this for? What do you do with this? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just going, okay.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of that Mary stuff. We're just pondering these things in my heart and not feeling any need to get to a conclusion, to get to some kind of usefulness for it, to make it productive. I'm just pondering these pieces of a puzzle that God's putting in my heart from a number of sources and seeing where it goes. So I'm very contented and very excited. I'm going out next week on my first trip since the pandemic started, just a brief stop in Amarillo, Texas to help with a group there. And then since I got to fly through Denver anyway, I'm going to get off there and spend a couple of days with my son. And
nice.
So I'm really looking forward to having a little time with him and then fly back. And then I don't have any trips planned beyond that. Sarah and I have both been vaccinated, so
okay.
We are a little bit freer, but I'm not sure what there is to travel for yet and who's getting together where and who's got mandates left. And, you know, we're trying to be very responsive with the fact that, yeah, Sarah and I can be a little freer, but people who haven't been vaccinated yet can't. And so we're not wanting to just shove that in people's faces or put people at risk by my travel and bringing people together. So we are literally living one day at a time. And I couldn't be more content, more at rest, and more thrilled.
I know that you've been a project person a lot. I mean, you're definitely a go-getter. You work hard. You press into things when you've got a project that you're working on. I mean, you're at 120 miles an hour when you're on. You're at 120 miles an hour. Do you think that? I guess I've just been intrigued as to why you feel like this season has been a little bit more of a thin space for you. Do you think it's just a unique season that God is drawing you into, or do you think it's because you don't have any projects at the moment?
No, I would say this thin space has been going on for probably almost a year.
Okay.
And I haven't talked a lot about it. So really, I don't know if it's pandemic related. I don't know if it's because that has just increased the time in my life. Mm-hmm. But when I trace it back, it would go back to some of that stuff we shared on Embracing His Glory on the podcast. Yeah. And letting God poke holes in my pretensions and not trying to bandage them up. And that's incredibly painful. I mean, people hear everything in that because I like my pretensions as much as anybody likes theirs. You know, we have them because they're comforting and they're fun. And when God pokes holes in it, when you're willing to say, okay, I'm willing to go through that hole and see where this ends up rather than I'm going to protect myself. And I think some of that stuff has really borne fruit in my heart. So I think it's partly that. It's partly I'm willing to look at things that I might not have looked as aggressively at a year ago.
Yeah.
But I also think something else is changed in the wind of the Spirit. Because I'm getting not just that thin space for me, I'm getting dreams and visions and input from other people that resonate in what God's been showing me in almost very exact to the terminology kind of ways, where you know, okay, this is a God thing for sure.
Yeah.
And I have never had a season, I have not had a season in the last, say, 20 years where I have, maybe my whole life, where I've had as much of that kind of insight, input, people telling me, I've got an inkling, man, does this make any sense to you? And I'll go, yeah, it makes some sense. So thank you. And I've thank God's given me a different way to hold those things in my heart. And not have to make a decision and not have to do something in light of them, just letting, it's like a bunch of puzzle pieces. And okay, I've got about 15, 20 puzzle pieces here and they're glorious. I love them, but I have no idea how they go together yet. I have no idea what this puzzle looks like. I've got other people in that with me in various prayers and conversation things. And so I'm going, this is definitely a season. It's been one of the most inspiring since I was a young man and first got filled with the Spirit and had the sense that God speaks in the world. And I feel like God and I've been growing a relationship for the last 25 years in love. So I don't feel like our relationship's finally working. I just go, somehow something's happening in the world or in me that's made that space thinner. And it could just be for a season. It could just kind of be something and God makes clear and we go on from there. So who knows, but I've decided to enjoy it. And, I don't have a project in mind, though. I've got to figure out what we do with the My Friend Lewis stuff after the last week or two. So, and then there's a couple of books still that maybe we'll go after, maybe not. There's some things I want to do on the blog. So, I'll have some other stuff to do. But right now, I'm not feeling pressed to do any of it. So I'm not.
Yeah, I guess that's the feeling that I've gotten from you the last few times that you and I've talked, is just like this sense that there isn't this angst or even this need to explore projects. There's more of just a rest and like, I like the word, or I resonate with the word of contentment of I'm just enjoying this day and I'm enjoying the moment that I have. And I'm getting surprised by things that I didn't even know I could get surprised by.
Yes. And even the after show we had on Sunday with some of the God Journey folks, a real theme in that, which I think is just what God is speaking to a lot of people. So it's not, and even there's people in there I don't even know who came on and shared some things around their heart going, I think that's in that wheelhouse. And it's this love, rest, play. That when we live there, and it doesn't mean life is great. You can be at rest and at play in a horrible, horrible crisis. You can.
Yes.
And at rest and at play is, that's what I took away from Sunday's meeting. At rest and at play is where we more easily recognize what God's about. And anxiety and desperation and frustration, that white knuckling kind of prayer life, is where we're least perceptive and least effective. And we're kind of telling God everything we think he should do for us and he's not doing it. And then we go away frustrated and angry. And I really do think God's inviting a different generation of brothers and sisters who maybe in the last few years have had this undercurrent of God developing a more loving relationship with God in their heart, more affection-based. I think maybe some of that's getting ready to bear fruit in a wider way than just any of us even know at this moment, that God wants to reveal the glory of his sons and daughters in the earth in a way that's different than has been happening for the last 20 years, where more the religious voices have taken center stage, and the more angry voices at people in the world and brokenness. And I don't know. I'm, again, I'm on a roller coaster ride. We're partway up the big fall, and who knows what's coming on the other side. But I think it's going to be fun, A, and B, I think it's going to be challenging. Anytime when people hear about God's glory being revealed, and we all have things in our head that go, oh, that'll be awesome, and people will beat a path to our door. Well, Jesus revealed God's love in the world, and it got him killed. So I'm not under any illusion that this is just me. Hey, we're finally going to get what we deserve in the world. No, we're gonna get whacked and hurt and rejected, because that's just the way the world responds to love. But where people are hurting and ready for that, eyes to see, ears to hear, that love's going to settle in their heart in wonderful ways. So I'm just looking forward to whatever that means. Yeah, but I love that emphasis of rest, play, love. And would encourage people who listen to this to say, hey, if you don't know what that means, and you're kind of more the white knuckle it, frustrated, angry, just feel like God never big enough for me and all that stuff, this is a good time to lean into different space and say, Jesus, would you teach me how to live inside your affection, even when I don't see it, how to live inside your rest, because your work has already been accomplished, and how to find that playfulness in God that allows us to hear him better. And I mean that by there's a lightheartedness to a productive Jesus journey, and the heavy-heartedness is more of a religious thing. And that's one of the things that I look back and say, you know, probably what religion has stole from us more than anything is the playfulness. Because religion institutionally is all about commitment and fear and doing your best and giving God excellence. And it's taken all the childlikeness of, I'm just here to play with God, just wanted to play with me. Same thing I want to do with my grandkids. That play has changed as they've grown, but I'm going to mess with them. I don't care how old they get. I'm going to mess with those kids as long as they want to be around me. And I think the things God teaches me come out of that playfulness. I love how playful God can be in a really wholesome way. And I don't mean flippant, and I don't mean, you know, just making a joke about everything. I mean, there's a humor and a lightheartedness inside a real revelation of God that is endearing. And I think that's what people are looking for. People in pain, people feel like they've been pushed to the end of their rope. They're looking for that playfulness and lightheartedness that allows them to take a breath in the midst of whatever they're going through and know God's got my back, God's with me, I'm not alone.
Well, and I feel like, especially after the after show, but just in other areas and other venues of life, I feel like the pandemic was a season of white knuckling. That people talked about being at peace, and people talked about being at rest, or that they had good self-care, or that they had a good work-life balance. And then COVID hit. And I mean, I really feel like a lot of the actual, like, do you believe that, or are we like grabbing the tail of the ship and in the midst of the storm and holding on for dear life and trying to force it into submission and very much white knuckling it? And I guess I've been having some conversations, and I'd love your thoughts on this. And this kind of came up in the after party, or the after
party
conversation. I keep calling it that. Like I did last time too. I called it the after party last time.
The after party. I don't get that.
What are we calling it? The after show?
What are we calling
it? The after show.
It is an after show. That's what it is.
The after show. Okay. So on the after show that took place on Sunday, we kind of went into this space as well. And I've been having some conversations with some friends and some family about just this angst that people are feeling in regards to the government's restrictions that they're putting on people. And also the frustration when there's some things that are coming out that don't align with research or don't make sense. And there's just this frustration of when do I stand up and fight? When do I push back? When do I stand my ground? Or is this just a season where, you know, I'm supposed to just take it, or I'm supposed to just flow with whatever the government says? And I've talked with a lot of people that have really struggled with what does that look like? How do I do that in a healthy way? How do I not let that dominate my life or dominate my heart space? But then really feeling this struggle of how do I walk that line of, of living in peace and grace, but also I'm really angry and I'm really frustrated about what's going on in the world around me. And I don't know, like, is there a time for me to stand up and fight against this or to push back in this or to hold my ground? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, boy, because that's going to be so circumstantial, right? And so needing to be led by the Spirit. I find it interesting now that the people that were really frustrated during the Trump presidency felt like they were being left out and the government wasn't taking care of us well and blah, 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 blah. That's all flipped now. So now now those who felt like, hey, this is what we wanted from our government, more backing off, more whatever. Now we've got just the opposite in Biden, which is that wokest, we're going to take everything. We're going to put critical race theory into every program. We're going to do this stuff. And so now we've got an opposite set of people that are really frustrated at government. And it all has to do with who's in power that you like and who's not. And then what is the government mandating? I mean, I'm as frustrated as I could be at how leftist Biden went, even though he promised to kind of fight for the middle ground and he hasn't. That the amount of money they're spending on programs to change the very nature of America and redistribute wealth, I think it's just unconscionable. But there are people that are really excited about that government finally getting to do what government needs to do. And, you know, Trump took out critical race theory from a lot of the educational kinds of things, and the Trump Biden administration put it right back in.
Yeah.
And we're at a very bad time for us as an American people to respect each other's views and find government policy that's fair to the differences. It's not there. It's as bad now left as I thought it was a year ago to the right. Yeah. And science is being ignored in a set of different ways. It was being ignored in the Trump administration on one side, and now it's being ignored on the other side, because what you realize, I think, with most people in the world, it's really not about science, even though they claim that it is. It's always about agenda. I've got an agenda. Yeah. That I'm willing to, as a citizen, make my other fellow citizens do what I think's best for them, even if they don't. I'm going to ram it down their throats. And it's getting to be an extremely difficult time for us as a nation to communicate about things that matter, to hold respect in our hearts for people who see it differently than we do, and for us not to just use the mechanisms of government to force our will on people.
Yeah,
and I think probably the woke crowd, the leftist crowd, is much more on that wavelength. We're going to empower government and we're going to get it. And yet on the right, there's people there that want to take control of the government and mandate their means of behavior or means of whatever. And it's a bad time to fix these problems. It just is a bad time. But individually, if you're asking, what do we do? When do we stand up? When do we don't stand up? And to me, it just all depends on, one, what we're being asked to do. And if it violates my conscience, then I can't go there. And if I suffer, if I lose my job, if I have consequences of that, then be willing to take them. If you're going to resist the policy of your employer or the government or whatever, there are usually consequences to that. And again, if you're not living to your own self-interest, if you're living to a higher ideal, then that's one thing. For myself personally, and I think for people of faith, there's a different dynamic at work here. One of the scriptures that has troubled me in the first professional ministry role I had, I was on staff at a growing congregation. It was a fairly large and significant one in the community it was in. And every time I stumbled across Mark 10, which was often because I read the Gospels quite a bit, I'd stumble across that, you know, that fighting of the disciples over who's going to be first, who's going to be best in the kingdom. And then Jesus says, you know how those regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their high officials exercise authority over them? It's not so with you. And I love it. Some translations are, you know, I forbid it. You know, it can't, you not to do that. It just, it's not so with you. It's just not a reality. That's a world reality, is men and women love to get in positions of authority, whether it's employment, government, whatever, church hierarchy, to make other people do what they think is in their best interest. And Jesus said, that's not where the kingdom lives at all. It's not so with you. You're different than that. And I could never... The roles I had in ministry in those first employment,
I couldn't see that we didn't have authority over. I remember our pastor telling the elders one day, don't you come here with insight from the congregation for me. I get my insight from God, and I tell you, and you tell the congregation what we're doing. And I went, how are we not lording over? How is this not that? And I said, this is one of those troubling scriptures. And then it ends with, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And that really messed with me so many ways, religiously, politically, spiritually, you can name it. If anyone had the right to be served, you would think it's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He could show up on the planet, doggone, you're going to do everything I say when I say it. And if he didn't come to be served, but to serve, that changes the whole dynamic of my heart. I don't live in this culture to get what I think is best for Wayne or what it is that Wayne needs. But I live to be a servant and to make the way for others. And so much of, I think about that when you talk about where do we stand up. I've seen Christians stand up for so long for our rights to meet during the pandemic, even if it's unsafe, whether it is or not. There's always that controversy, whether it's the right not to be vaccinated, if that's going to cause a problem with the culture as a whole, because we can't get enough people to vaccinate to impede the progress of this thing. There's that spirit in Christianity which feels so offended and hurt by the way the country has gone away from its Christian underpinnings from 250 odd years ago, that the response is anger and assertion and frustration. And you hear it in their voice and you see it in what they say about the others, and particularly a lot of religious freedom as Christian groups see it, is oppression for other groups of people. And so then I always ask myself, how am I being a servant here? Am I being a servant to those other people? Or am I just a servant to people who see the world the way I do, and we're going to serve each other to get the way we want? And that's one of those troubling scriptures that's never far from my heart.
Yeah.
How do I live in the world as a servant? But I don't think people of faith are required to do that. I don't think just because you're conservative, you shouldn't be able to stand up for your rights and push for change in the culture. But overall, I'm taking the posture where I don't have that kind of authority in government. I can roust about in a blog or a book, and it doesn't move much of the national needle. Those that control that are in a different forum than I am. And to be in that forum, you have to be a different kind of person than I am. There was somebody a number of years ago wanted to train me to be in the media for some of my points of view. But the training is how to all be caustic, because that's what makes good television. And so I just went, I have no desire to do that. I don't have any. And I guess I'm going to trust that Jesus changes the culture the way he says he'll change it. It's through love and service, not through arrogance and fighting for our rights and going through all that. So does that make any sense in what you're asking? I'm sorry that's so long.
No, you're good. No, it does. You know, I feel really torn, because I would say that it's been a very challenging last year, and yet there's I felt very strongly this invitation to love, rest, and play. And so that, you know, so there's been that piece of it. Like, primarily the challenge has been in like work environment, and working at the school that I'm currently working at. But I also am thankfully in a state that I didn't feel the oppression and the isolation that people felt. It would have been really, I can't fathom how difficult it would have been to be isolated in my home for weeks on end and told I wasn't allowed to go out. Like, you can't go out. You can't even get groceries, like, or we're going to bring the groceries to you. You know, I don't know how I would have done if that had been the space. I don't honestly know what I would have done. I probably would have said, okay, I appreciate that you have to do this in the cities. I'm out. I'm going somewhere where I don't have to do this, because I can't do it. I will literally tear the walls down in my house, and my wife probably will not want to be in the same place as me anymore.
Off to the woods.
Yeah. And I, you know, and then I think about, Jesus is saying, like, I love what you said in the passage that you just quoted about, I came to love and to serve, and that I had every right to be served, and yet I set that crown aside. I set that right aside, and I came and served and loved the people around me. And yet there's also this other flip side where Jesus was really frustrated when he got to the synagogue and saw the level of corruption that the Sadducees were placing in his, like, in a space that was supposed to be designed to worship God and to uplift and encourage the downtrodden, to take care of the widows and the orphans. But instead there was intense corruption. Like, I've been going through this really interesting study on the five different responses to Hellenism and Roman rule by Jewish people, and looking at the Essenes, the Herodians, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the Zealots, and looking at the five different responses that the Jewish people made. And, like, Jesus spent most of his time working in Pharisaic communities. Like, that, even though, like, that's, there was a lot of pushback from that, that's where he spent the bulk of his time. And then, but then he goes to Jerusalem and challenges the Sadducees, and he was dead within a few weeks. And these were, like, the lead families in the priest realm of the Jewish system at that time. And he called out on the corruption. Yeah, it got him killed. And yet he stood, and he knew, like, when I stand up and when I call this out, it probably is going to end my life. And so it's there. I wrestle with that piece of it too. You know, it's like, okay, Lord, like, because I hear, like, the frustration of some of the people that I've been having these conversations with, where they're in their workplace and there's this severe left agenda that administration and people are trying to push in education or force in these workspaces, and just their frustration and their angst of, like, look, that doesn't even align with our company's principles. Like, 10 years ago, this wouldn't even be a conversation. This wouldn't even be a space, because it's isolating a whole nother group. It's cutting down a whole nother set of employees. And it's not building bridges. It's just pushing a different agenda. And so, man, my heart hurts for those people that are in that environment as well. And how do you live out of that space of love and rest and play in that environment? Like, what does that even look like?
And you got to keep your eye on the prize. You know, if you're talking, like, critical race theory, and I haven't done extensive reading on it, but I hear enough of it as it's interpreted to go, this is not helping our discussion on race. This is absolutely diminishing the white European ancestry. It's not helping us recognize white supremacy. What it calls white supremacy is not what most people, white people, would say. Yeah, I've been spending my whole life trying to do that. I think it's extreme. I think conservative views on the white supremacy side, white supremacist groups, that's extreme. Mm-hmm. And what I try and tell people, if you're going to be in this arena, one is keep your eyes off the extremes and really say, have we got a problem? Do we need to fix it? What do we do to fix it? And I think we do have a problem. I think there's definite preferential treatment for white people, just because there's more of us and we're all connected in business, family, relationship worlds. And a lot of people of color get left out of that. And that's just been ongoing. And slavery was the start of that, but it's been, particularly in the South, there's been things done specifically to keep black people down and not let them have access. So do we have a responsibility as a culture to take marginalized groups and find ways for them? Yes.
Absolutely.
But does that go to, I've got to diminish my whiteness, I've got to be embarrassed because I'm European, or just assuming everybody's racist, even if it's, because I think most white people, when you talk about racism, they talk about intent. And when most black people talk about racism, they don't talk about intent, they talk about result. You may not be racist, but neither do you invite a black person into your boardroom.
Yeah.
So the fruit of that still feels racist to us who are left out. And so how do we navigate that conversation? That's why I'm going to Amarillo. We're helping a college do that, trying to say, how do we deal with anti-racism without falling into the critical race theory that doesn't help because it just alienates more white people that actually need to be your ally to get the problem fixed, right? Yeah. And some of that is so extreme that I hear it from business community, educational community. Same thing when the gender equity wars were being fought out here in California and gay rights and gender identity issues. And you just go, okay, the extreme points, and I get the extreme tries to move the needle more toward the middle. But people really believe what the extremists are saying is what they really want. And it alienates the very people that could be helpful to you. I read something recently from a conservative think tank that defined racial equity as equal results. So if we both go to the job and I work hard and you don't work hard, then we're guaranteed the same pay whether or not we do the same amount of work. And that's how they define equity. So I've had people, conservatives, tell me they're against racial equity. And I go, hold it a minute. What can you say you're against racial equity? Because I'm not for guaranteed outcomes. Well, I'm not for guaranteed outcomes either. But when most people talk about racial equity, that's not what they're talking about. They're not talking about equal outcomes. They're talking about equal opportunity.
Yeah.
But if there's a whole group that now talks against racial equity because you've got a definition for it that's not used in the wider culture. And I honestly think conservative groups and liberal woke groups do this. They manipulate the language so that we can't have a conversation, whether it's illegal immigrant or undocumented alien or what. And they can't even use alien, undocumented worker or non-papered citizen. I mean, we keep changing the language so we can't have the conversations. And I think people need to wake up to that. But I even look at Jesus, you know, going into the temple and disturbing all that. And I did it. God led him to do it. But did it help? Did it change the temple? He confronted the Pharisees. I think he loved you. You, woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites. I mean, he's right out there. You do this, this, and this, and this. Did it change them? It didn't change them. They're killing him, right? Right. Yeah. You know. So, I think some of those things Jesus is doing to show us who have ears to hear, who read those things and go, "Oh, God doesn't have that on his heart." No, I'm going to live in a different space. Not saying, "Oh, that was effective." I'm going to go into a church setting this Sunday morning that's meeting in spite of the virus, and I'm going to decry them and call them hypocrites and all that stuff. It's not going to change anything other than you get arrested. So the wider thing, Jesus challenged the religious status quo, not by just yelling at the Pharisees. It was by healing on the Sabbath. It was forgiving the adulteress. It was doing things that were scandalous because love is a scandal. Yeah.
Rest, love, and play.
Yes. And that's scandalous. Just the nature of it. I think in our world where people are wearied of the political polarization, they're wearied of the pandemic, they're wearied of all those things. If there were a group of people not faking it, but genuinely at love, at rest, and at play, people would go, I want some of that. Not because their circumstances are perfect, just because there's something of life inside them more real than what this age is throwing at them. That's what the world's waiting for. And I don't think we provide, for the most part, many Christians have just joined the world. Not in its agenda, but in its methodology. So we have a different agenda, but we're still angry, still frustrated, still pushing for our way in the same way that they are. And that's why you have to counteract one with the other and saying, no, you know what? Jesus did say we had to. Yes, he went to the temple. Yes, he could. But that's a small part of the whole gospel readings. He's mostly wandering through towns, loving people, healing the blind, touching the sick, spending time helping people understand who his father was. That was how he lived his life. And he was endearing enough that people close enough said, I want some of that. And people who weren't close enough said, I got to kill that. So it was both reactions.
Yeah.
And living as a servant in the world is not a people-pleasing thing. It's just, I'm trusting God to provide for what I need. And definitely the Gospels are lived out and then written about in an oppressive regime where the Jews had no rights, no whatever, and they weren't part of a democracy that could vote or manipulate public opinion. So they were in a very different construct. But Jesus just, I'm a servant. Even the things he did to Roman generals would have been scandalous to Jewish minds, right? and tax collectors. And I heard this term today, which really touched me, which is unreasonable love. And I just went, wow, that's love is beyond reason. And it came from Stefan, the guy who I was on the podcast a little bit back.
Yeah.
Talking about love. And I love that phrase. I love unreasonable love, because living the way God asks us to ought to defy the logic of people who don't see beyond the temporal.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't mean, if God's not real and if he's not got my back, then living the way I live is stupid, irrational, unreasonable. But if he is, and if he's in my life, and if he's guiding me to the things he's guiding me to do, then there's nothing unreasonable about it, but it will appear unreasonable. And now Stefan was using it was just, I don't need a reason to love you. You're human. Mm. Just love without reason. Love without needing a reason or something I get back out of it, particularly in a spousal relationship, husband, wife kind of thing. If you're going to do quid pro quo in marriage, and, you know, and I've heard this analogy, it's a marriage bank, and you got to make deposits and withdrawals. And if you make more withdrawals and deposits, then oh my gosh, that's so transactional.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite.
And exhausting.
Yes. Which is the opposite of how do we serve in love. But then there's the protection. I mean, I don't think serving in love means you become the doormat to an abusive spouse. If only one partner is loving in a marriage, the marriage eventually becomes abusive.
Yeah.
If only one is serving, then it eventually becomes abusive. Serving is the mutual joy of a couple that wants to have a life together that's worth living, worth loving, worth caring about.
I think so often they view that, like when Jesus said, I've come to serve, that I came to, like, as he's washing his disciples' feet. I mean, the way that he loved people was insanely disruptive, because it went so against not just cultural norms of the Jewish community, but it went against entire global humanistic social views. I mean, whether they be Roman or whether they be Greek or whether they be Jewish, I mean, the way that he lived his life and the way that he loved was so disruptive. And like, I love the word that you say, I love the word scandalous, because it was like, how could you say, like, a centurion of faith? Like, how do you look at the centurion and say, like, you have more faith than anybody I've ever known? Like,
or the Syrophoenician woman. There were so many, even the lepers, the 10 lepers he healed. The one that came back wasn't even Jewish. He was the only one that wasn't Jewish. It was just like, wow, this other people seem to open to it quicker than the religious mindset is able to embrace the way God works. And I think that's because we've taken all the love, play, and rest out of it. The religious activity is almost always frenetic. It's always, you never do enough. It's always in fear. It's the opposite of that love, play, rest that God's called us into.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just such a different way to live. And I think just this season of my journey, I think I'm finding out more what that means than I ever have before, which I hope I'm saying that 5 years from now. I'm learning more now than I've ever. Yeah, because I think this is a growing curve. We're not normally inclined to relax into God's goodness, love, and joy without a personal agenda to it. And it's got to be something in it for me. No, you're never going to get there if there's got to be something in it for you.
Yeah.
You got to get there because you're endeared to him. He's inviting you to a different way of living. And that love becomes so engaging that, like Stefan said to me today, it's like that pearl of great price. You'll give anything to have it.
Yeah.
It's not, well, I've got to go do this for God or I may end up in hell. That will take you nowhere. It's no, God's so engaging. That, man, I've got to have that pearl, and I'm going to give up whatever it takes to find it. To me, people living with that endearment in the world will see God's hand move in incredible ways. And people who are white-knuckling it, looking out for their rights, yelling and screaming at the people they consider the other, you can't love the other if you're trying to defeat them. You can't. And somehow that reality is not one we can do in ourselves. That's not a human commitment kind of thing. That's the fruit of living loved and living inside a reality that's greater than anything this temporal life gives us, as I see it.
Love it.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.